Yeah, good morning, North State, and welcome to Free Fire Radio on KCNR 1460. It's 6 after the hour of 7. Carl and Linda Bott. Hey.
You mean 6 minutes after 7?
6 minutes after the hour of 7.
Okay.
You know, I've been watching these broadcasters. I'm picking this up. Hey, good morning, everybody. Looks like it's going to be a pretty nice day. We'll let Linda get to the weather here in a couple minutes. Our phone lines here are 605-4567, and we're streaming. That's right, Pam. We're streaming at KCNR1460.com. You and your husband keeping us up late last night. But I happen to know I'm going to probably have a better day than he is. You want to write to Linda, go to Linda at KCNR1460.com. Yeah. I am always accompanied by the shadow, the man who controls the board, the man who drives the yellow Jeep with the little butterflies on it. Yes, that's right, Bad Bob.
And good morning. I will let you know, though, I will not be here tomorrow, and for a very good reason.
What's the reason, Bob?
It's that parole hearing. You know, they're getting tough here in Shasta County, you know, when it comes to people littering.
Well, I'll expand on this later, but I'll be up at Lakehead Antlers Resort with the Coast Guard Auxiliary, and I can talk more about that later if you so desire, if we have a slow moment.
Absolutely.
It would have to be pretty slow there, but we'll get to that. But speaking of quick, fast, and beautiful, here's Linda Bott.
Oh, you are full of it this morning. Okay, loving it.
The meds are wearing off.
Today, get about a 30% chance of showers, mainly after 11 a.m., mostly cloudy with a high near 61. Tonight, a 20% chance of showers before 11 p.m., and that's going to be partly cloudy with the low of around 43. So we have a lot of things to cover today. We do have Tom Harmon, who is running for
Attorney General.
He's a senator. Out of actually the North State, out of Sacramento, down in the San Diego area, actually, isn't he not? Is he not?
He's out of Orange County. He's in
Orange
the 35th
County,
district.
Okay. Right. I always think Orange County, San Diego. It's not the same.
We met him up here.
Right. Yeah. So he's going to be calling in today, and various other sundries of things. Currently 36 degrees. Oh, okay. Well, we had salmon last night, and I don't know about you as we approach the summer season, how much it's fun to get the salmon, especially if you can get any local salmon. I'm not sure that even happens anymore, but fresh-caught salmon from the Trinity is just the best. But
I'm going to go fishing. They're opening up the salmon season. Yeah.
Two things I want to do this summer. And maybe you can email me if you are listening, Linda at KCNR1460.com. I want to do a houseboat trip. We even talked about doing a live remote from a houseboat trip and invite, you know, like do people who call in and have four or five people that join us for breakfast on the boat. And I've never done it. I think it'd be wonderful from the eyes of somebody who's never done it. I don't know. Is that just like boring? But I wouldn't think it would be, because it's a houseboat in Shasta's full, and we were up there last weekend and it was absolutely gorgeous. I can't wait to try it. You're laughing at me.
Oh no, honey, I'm just enjoying the moment. Today also we're having one of the performing arts companies coming in here for the Pirates of Penzance, but you know, we're gonna take a quick break. It's easy for me to say, a quick break here. And when we come back, let's talk a little bit about the Planning Commission and the fact that what exactly did they know before they voted that impacted or would impact on building a hotel on the river. Carl and Linda Bott, Free Fire Radio, KCNR 1460, clearly News Talk Radio.
Morning, Redding. Beautiful North State. It's 36 degrees outside, but according to what we're looking at here, it's nice and sunny. Although they say there's a chance of showers today, I don't want to believe it. I just don't want to go there. Okay, today is a nice day.
You know, we set a record this morning, though, for being like 35. I think that's the lowest it's been in years.
It's 36 degrees, but it feels great out.
Oh, well, it's a good day.
It's 605-4567. We're taking your calls. Okay, now, for those of you who are fish lovers, we were talking in the last break about salmon, sardines. And I'm going to share a little story with you about how I grew up with a dad out of Southern. My dad was from Southern California, and so he ate octopus, oysters. He ate weird stuff. So you kind of grow up with that in your household. So I grew up, I love sardines on saltines with mayonnaise. That's a snack that every now and then I'll go in and make, and I just love it. So sardines, Pacific wild caught, are one of the healthiest foods we can consume, according to the health and environmental experts they interviewed on Sea Change and the latest issue of Eating Well magazine. These days, so many of us are trying to get more omega-3 fats in our diet because they benefit your heart and your brain. These nutritional powerhouses are one of the best sources of omega-3 fats, with a whopping 1,950 milligrams per 3 ounce. That's more per serving than salmon, tuna, or just about any other food. And they're packed with vitamin D. And because sardines are small and low on the food chain, they don't harbor lots of toxins like bigger fish can. Plus, they're also one of the most sustainable fish around. Quick to reproduce, Pacific sardines have rebounded from both overfishing and a natural collapse in the 1940s, so much so that they are one of the Seafood Watch's super green sustainable choices. Love that. Love that. And you know what? We are on a...
They're less expensive, and if it gives you better, you know, health benefits for it, and sardines aren't bad.
And Carl and I have started a fitness program, and so we are really watching what we're eating and all that stuff. And, oh, we'll talk about that later, but, you know, we don't want to do any false...
let's talk about the Planning Commission. Okay, we've had salmon, we've had sardines. So let's go to the Planning Commission. You know, the Planning Commission just authorized, you know, passed...
Salmon and sardines aren't important?
The Planning Commission just recently passed a... when they voted to say that they could have... opened up the gate so that the hotel could be built there along the river. And the reason, the only reason I'm bringing it up is not because it wasn't the thing that should be done, but the Planning Commission did not know that the planning for the hotel coming out of the Turtle Bay McConnell Foundation was on the table there. According to Cameron Middleton, that nothing was mentioned to them about the interest that Turtle Bay and McConnell Foundation had. Well, I mean, I think everybody knew about it, but not specifically. So... when they, you know, after they found out about it, Cameron Middleton, and rightly so, waved the flag and said, wait a minute, how come we weren't just even told about this? Because the week after they signed it, or they passed it, the city council then offered the land to McConnell Foundation and Turtle Bay. You know, my thing on this is, as I've said before, the time that Kurt Starman had the meeting with Mike Warren and Judy Salter and the person from the Northland Wonderland company. They and I'm not saying McConnell or Turtle Bay did anything wrong, but why did Kurt Starman keep it a secret? Why were the messages he put out, the emails, marked confidential? Why weren't the people on the Planning Commission told that, hey, by the way, this is going to impact favorably on the hotel that's going to be built? You know, to me, the idea of our government is that it's just completely transparent. We've had enough of deals in the back room. We've had enough of good old boys making the arrangements. We've had enough of, you know, moneyed interest making the decisions for us, and the city having to kind of like, and the people just having to dance around. You know, and I hold staff members responsible for this, of course. You know, they may not have had nefarious purposes for it. There may have been reasons, but why? What could be the reason not to tell people? I mean, the people making the decisions. Was it going to make the road a little more bumpy? Was there going to be something else that was brought up, you know, that people, you know, they didn't want other people to know about? The people, of course, being the voters and the ones paying their salaries, So do you ever wonder about that? Wonder why this happens and why it continues to happen? Do you ever ask the city council, you know, why are you allowing this to happen? Isn't there something you could say is the next time a backdoor deal perceives to be done, that's your first warning, and it's in writing. And if it happens again, I hope you enjoy the North State, because you can live here, but you're not going to be working here. And I don't understand what is so hard to get that across to people. You know, a simple mistake, I can understand that. You know, I make mistakes all the time. But something like this that impacts on people, impacts on the taxpayers, impacts on us, there should never, ever even be a hint, not even a hint, of impropriety. Patrick Jones, when he took his trip back to the East Coast, as soon as somebody brought up the fact is, hey, you know what, you can't do that, he turned right then and wrote a check out. He was unaware of what was happening there, that he couldn't, you know, that when he went back there to do, when he went back there to plead the city's case for getting money for the Oasis Interchange, that he couldn't have it paid for by somebody else. Well, it was paid for by somebody else. There may have been a judgment thing there, you know, a minor one, but he immediately fixed it. Why? And this is before it came out in the paper or anything like that, he immediately fixed it. Why is it that we have to find things out because somebody inside leaked it out about there's something going on here? It shouldn't happen. Government at all levels should be transparent. That's all we're asking for. Just let us know what's going on. Carl and the Bot, Free Fire Radio, KCNR 1460, Clearly, News Talk Radio. Yeah, welcome back to Free Fire Radio on KCNR 1460. It's Carl and Linda Bott. It is 7:24. Hey, we're streaming out there at KCNR1460.com, and our phone lines here are 605-4567. This portion of the show brought to you by Tobacco and Brew, 2143 Hilltop Drive. Espresso Joe's is the spot you get your coffee. The girls will fix it any way you want it. You can go to the meeting room next door and turn on your computer because they got a Wi-Fi. And you can, or you could go into the Tobacco Emporium, find that right cigar for yourself. Tobacco and Brew, 2143 Hilltop Drive, so much more than just a Tobacco Emporium.
Currently 36 degrees on this beautiful Thursday. We were talking about sardines early, and I said, Carl, he was like, hey, you know what, it's important.
It
sardines.
Is important.
And yeah. You know what? We have somebody on the line that wants to talk about it. Good morning, Bob. Welcome to KCNR. You're on the line.
Good morning, Linda and Carl. You had everything right about the sardines and saltines. Instead of mayonnaise, you use Velveeta cheese.
Oh, you're killing me, Bob.
I could do Velveeta cheese, but it has to be salami in that. I've never done the Velveeta and the sardines. That might be some kind of twist. I probably will try. Just once.
Salami sounds good too.
You know what? Here's the problem with: if you take the knife and you put it in the mayonnaise jar, and then you put it on the saltine, and if there's sardines in there on it, and then you put the knife back into the mayonnaise. You know, I just have a real problem with this.
You know,
I have little fish heads.
Bob, I'm married to this Marine who's been, you know, all over the world and served 30 years of his life, and just got a thing about sardines. I'm like, at least you didn't have, you know, fried cow brain delivered to you. My dad, you know, or what is it called? Mountain oysters.
Rocky Mountain oysters.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't know what those things were.
That could be Saturday. So, hey, Bob. Thanks, Velveeta cheese. Now, guess who she's going to experiment with that on?
It's wine, a bottle of wine.
And a bottle of wine. Okay, you know, that'll help anything go down. All right, thanks a lot, Bob. Hey, John, you're on line 12, KCNR.
Good morning, Carl and Linda. How are you this morning?
We're great.
So do you like sardines, John?
They're all right. They, you know, you can put a lot of them in a can.
Yeah, you can. Oh,
okay.
That was good. Put a bump.
Okay, listen. Carl, I agree with your perceptions of the city staff's lack of transparency and very possibly integrity, not just by them, but also by the staff of the benefiting agencies such as Turtle Bay. I don't think the public is receiving a fair shake at all. City staff members are not being held accountable by any city council because of each councilman is trading off obvious due criticism for staff and to get cooperation in their own special little projects. Staff knows they can drag their feet and outwait the term of any councilman, so staff holds the stick, and they are the tail that wags the dog. Unfortunately, I'm not sure what can be done about this, because staff is holding us all as hostages to their agenda. And this sounds, you know, so nefarious. But
I'm not sure if it's nefarious, and I'm not even sure if it's Machiavellian. What I think is that the council, our elected representatives, have got to make it real clear to everybody, starting on the staff. And I'm not saying the staff's not doing a good job. I'm just saying is that the issue of transparency and the issue of letting the people, the voters, know what's going on is paramount. And it should be made paramount to them. That just says, hey, wait, guys, you're not doing it.
I think it's time we stopped not saying staff is not doing a good job, because staff is not doing a good job if they're not supplying transparency to the public. That is not a good job. Whose best interest are they working for? They're being paid by the citizens of Reading, and yet they're acting in a very beneficial way to individual benefits, not to the public. Now, you know, a lot of people have criticized the article that came out where Cameron from Planning Commission was talking about the fact that he was not made aware of this applying to Turtle Bay. That the staff went in and requested this dispensation, if you will, on property on a very honorable cause, and that was the Veterans Museum out at the airport.
Right.
And they did not include Turtle Bay in this, and they just slid that, and they used the good concept of the Veterans Museum to get a different program in place. This deception of the public is not doing a good job.
You're absolutely right, and that's the point I was trying to make.
I know it was, and you made it. I'm agreeing with
you're,
you.
Are you reiterating my point?
I am, Carl. What can we do about it is the next step. And
the first thing we have to do, John, is take a break. Carl Lindebach, Free Fire Radio, KCNR, clearly News Talk Radio. Hard break, John.
Good morning, Reading. Maybe it's the song, or maybe it's, I don't know. Did you get some good sleep last night? Carl's doing his air guitar and his twirl, and I don't know. Currently 38 degrees this morning. I know that's not sound cold, but it's not. It feels good. It feels really good. KCNR 1460, taking your calls this morning, 605-45-67. Actually, our forecast is that there's a chance of showers today with a high of 61. But as we look to the computer, it says 38 with a great big old bursting sun. And we like that.
The weather rock is dry.
The weather rock for us. And we're still on the phone with John. Good morning, John. Welcome back to KCNR.
Thank you, Linda. And there's a couple things I'd like to just add into our conversation, and I don't just mean to start right into it. But one thing is, regardless of what has been done in regards to this, I don't want it misconstrued that I am against Turtle Bay, because I'm totally in favor of Turtle Bay.
Well, we were just discussing that during the break. It's not Turtle Bay right here.
No,
that's
I'm
doing
not
this.
Even against the idea of a hotel or motel being there.
Not at
as
all.
Long as it's all legal. I'm kind of in favor of it, as a matter of fact. I don't think that the land should be given to a developer for them to make profit on, or even for Turtle Bay to make profit on. The city is in tremendous need of incoming capital to the general fund. And I don't see why it can't be applied to that particular building or concept. Now, I'm gonna wind up, if you don't mind, my thought about the city council and staff, and then go on from there. If city council is not doing their job, we vote them out. If city staff is not doing their job, it is up to our councilmen, our elected officials, to terminate them. Some of these terminations will cost money, contract resolution money, and I'm not going to name names here, just it is. Is it better to live with an incompetent, deceptive, and borderline criminal behavior from our staff, or would it be better to start over with a new employee and see if they will work for us instead of special interest?
Well, you know, the thing I believe is that your leadership has got to set the standards and say, hey, this is the way it's going to be. If you're not going to do this, you've had your chance, then it's termination. But the city council needs to show the leadership there, and it's got to be real clear. You know, whatever has happened in the past is past. And if it happens again, you know, you're going to be looking for another job.
But we have to document that. It has to be up front also.
Yeah.
The public has to know this is being done. And, you know, it's kind of like a commanding officer who has a master sergeant that is making end runs around his
operation. It's a staff thing you see at many levels.
Absolutely.
So, hey, John, we've got to run here. We've got a studio full of people.
Thank you so
here.
Much for your allowing me to pontificate here for a while.
Great, John. Thank you.
Guys,
all right, you too. Right. Hey, I just want to make sure. Thanks, John. I want to make sure that you know, we all have said this before, that you know, Carl and I believe in the education of Turtle Bay. We love the bridge. I think it's one of the best things that ever happened to the North State. It's made us a place of destination. I like to brag about it wherever I go, wherever I go. And I want to tell you some events that are coming up. Always support our community. And one of the things that is very rich in education with Turtle Bay, this May 1st is going to be the Butterfly House is opening, yes, with 32 species of butterflies found throughout the United States. Oh, gosh. They are going to, you can witness the magical experience of butterflies as they come out, dry their wings, and set flight. And I think I've never been there again. I just feel like, you know, I've lived up here. Where have I been my whole life? You know, I want to be in the room of butterflies. So that's happening May 1st. And also, for those of you who really want to transform your garden, guess what? It's the member party and pre-sale of Festa Botanica, where you can, from April 30th to May 1st, go to Turtle Bay's McConnell Arboretum, a botanical gardens plant nursery. You'll get to experience a festive twist to their annual spring sale, and you'll be able to transform your garden. They transform it into like a garden marketplace. There's going to be food, beer, and beverages, music, garden, art, and antiques, crafts, and vendors. And that is April 30th from 4 to 8, and the general public sale is May 1st. So go out and transform your backyard, because it's going to be a nice weekend.
I guess we won't talk about an oil slick. Let's take a break.
Let's not even go there.
Let's not talk about
come
the
back
oil
with
slick.
Some more art.
Let's talk about the Pirates of Penzance.
Art and music.
And they
are
out here. In fact, every time I turn around, there's two or three more walking in.
Wait a minute. Do you have something you're going to sing to take us out? Oh.
Oh, no. This is Carl and the Bot, Free Fire Radio, KCNR, 1460, clearly News Talk Radio.
Oh, we never speak a word. A vice football would be distinctly heard.
You know.
Wow! And that was
Carl
the minor
Lindabot,
stuff.
Free Fire Radio, KCNR 1460. You were just introduced back to the show. It's community radio at its very best.
I love it.
The Pirates of Penzance are here, and our computer started to go out, and we said, can you sing? And they said, can we sing?
Don't tell me that committed actors and singers cannot get up and be on the radio at a quarter till 8. You guys rock.
Paradox Theater Productions, and they're doing the Pirates of Penzance, and the director, Ashley Stander.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
This is so awesome, you guys. You know, that's one thing that that is really infectious. And that is when you get community theater together, when people are driven just because of the pure art of being together in a company and showing up to rehearsals, and you know that your fellow actor is depending on you, and they follow the lead of the director, and you may have a certain way that you... Maybe Ashley, we're talking to Ashley, the director, and of course we're going to introduce everybody in the cast in just a moment. But Ashley, when you direct, do you ever find that... Carl's working on your microphone over there. That you may have a certain idea of how to direct one of your actors, and they might not feel it like it's a... they coincide with your feelings, but then they actually do what... You say, what are you laughing at me for?
You're already into this question.
No, yes. Follow me. Follow me. You may be getting out of your car. Stay where you are. Don't open that door yet. But do you find that actually when they follow your direction, everybody's like, oh, my gosh, I never knew I had that in me. And that's the beauty of a great director. We're talking to Ashley Stander.
That is one of the fantastic things that I love about theater is just everyone getting together, working on projects and shows, and we also find the opposite happens, where I have this idea that I really want to have happen, and then the actor's like, well, maybe let's try it this way, and that ends up being what's in this show, because that's hilarious, and that's what we want to see.
Do you feel like you have the ingredients, but you get to mold it, the show, into kind of your form, so each show that you do has just a little bit of your signature on it?
Yes, I actually do have a signature for the shows that I direct. There's always a crushed rose somewhere in the show. So if you see a crushed rose within a show, that means Ashley had a hand in directing some of it.
How wonderful is that?
Okay, the other, our other actors that are here, Victoria Graham. Victoria.
Hello.
How are you doing, Victoria?
Oh, I'm just fine this morning.
Well, we see Victoria everywhere for a variety of reasons. Wade Riggs.
Good morning.
Good morning. You're wearing an Air Force hat on backwards. Can I assume that either somebody in your family or you've been in the Air Force?
I'm a veteran.
Great.
Yay.
Okay, hey,
we
applaud
you. Service.
Thank you for being a hero for our country. Ariel Couch.
Good morning.
Well, she's the smallest. They made her sit in the middle and, with no microphone.
Good morning.
Yay.
There you go. Now, you reach up as tall as you can, and you just say hello. There you did. Okay. And then Jeremiah Essis.
Yes.
Did I pronounce that correct?
Yes.
Okay. Jeremiah came in with a leather jacket, the tousled hair. He's ready for American Idol. Okay. He's there.
He looks like he's or three.
Just by the look.
7:30 in the morning. I've got pants on. Consider yourself lucky.
Well,
I'm not sure how to take that.
No, I.
Good thing this is radio.
Now, Pirates of Penzance is. Tell us who is who wrote Pirates of Penzance?
It was written by Gilbert and Sullivan. It was premiered 1869 in London,
so,
and then
so it's a topical type of play.
Yeah, very
it
much.
Is. It is actually. Very much. Yes.
And it premiered in 1859.
1869
in England, and it's really been in production ever since.
Yeah.
It's considered kind of an opera, light opera.
Operetta.
Yeah,
actually.
So does that mean there are no, everything is sung?
No. Not in this case. An opera has everything sung. Operetta has some acting scenes. We've actually taken a few of the more operatic moments, not all, but a few of the more operatic moments out, and had local arrangers put all of the music together to arrange for our 7-piece pit, which hasn't been done before, as far as I know.
Wow. So that is different.
We have a small orchestra, and we have just the main themes that everyone loves and not all the extra weird operatic stuff.
So tell us the dates. Paradox Theater Productions presents Pirates of Penzance. What are the dates?
May 1st, we have two performances. On the 3rd, or at 3 o'clock and 7 o'clock. May 2nd, that's Sunday at 3 o'clock. And then next weekend, May 7th and 8th at 7 o'clock. And we end on a matinee at 3 o'clock on the 9th.
So you have a nice run.
No,
yep.
And where's it going to be at?
CSLR. It's a church down on Hartnell. It's one half a block east of Victor.
Yeah. Center for Spiritual Living.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, we know that. Victoria.
Mm-hmm.
We have been, of course, we support the arts here in our community. And one of the things that I have just been amazed about is the number of performing groups that there are here. Now, however, I've seen you in at least three of them. So, I mean, you're kind of like the gypsy.
Yeah.
You're the gypsy that goes. But how many groups are there, would you say, or performing groups?
When I moved here about 8 years ago, I think it was primarily the Riverfront. But I knew it was I ran into people who kept saying, I want to see more. We want to see more. And so little by little, you've seen groups starting to come out. Reading City Musical Theater is one. The Jefferson Repertory Theater, which had opened right after the Cascade opened.
West Side Performing Arts
has been, I think, more recent. Of course, this is probably the baby here with the Paradox production. So, and it's not that we're siloed. You know, we're not just exclusive. If you're in this group, doesn't mean you don't go and work on that project with somebody else. And everybody shares actors. It's much like you see in any large metropolitan area such as the Bay Area.
So you just don't do it for the money, then?
Oh, you definitely don't do it for the money.
Well, Carl and I have always threatened that we're going to audition sometime for a play. But the deal is that you guys rehearse at night, and we have to get up at 5.
This is right.
So that would be like really pulling it, stretching it thin. But who knows? It would be so much fun to be part of a production, and I'm sure it's going to be just a fabulous production, The Pirates of Penzance. Victoria, what's your favorite number?
Oh, my favorite number. staring at me. I think Jeremiah and I get to sing a wonderful number called Way Away, which he's a little upset with me in my character, and I'm trying to chase after him, and he's trying to get away from me, and it is so much fun. But that's just one example. But what I love about Gilbert and Sullivan is they really poked fun at the social things that we still live today as far as relationships and ambitions, etc. And they influenced Monty Python, big deal. So numbers like that where it's big and it sounds big, but it's silly and fun and slapstick, and it's inept pirates and wonderful girls, and you know, just wonderful.
Sounds like fun. So
we're talking with the cast of Pirates from Penzance,
and we're going to take a quick break here. And we come back, we'll have them, and we can't stop them. They'll probably sing again. So Carl and Linda Bott, Free Fire Radio, KCNR 1460, clearly News Talk Radio.
Pirate King, I am a pirate king.
You are a rock of the pirate king.
And it is a glorious thing to be a pirate king.
It is a rock of the pirate king, a rock of the pirate king.
Okay, Carl in the Bot, Free Fire Radio. Casey and I, 1460, just blew out my...
Totally applaud you for just opening your pipes up at 7:45. Actually, it's 7:55 and currently 40 degrees. Weather's always brought to you by Anselmo Vineyards. Let's go to the cast members. Who are they?
Well, this is the Paradox Theater Productions. It's the Pirates of Penzance. It's the director is Ashley Stander. Good morning. Victoria Graham, who plays a pivotal part in here, I'm sure.
Are you a wench?
Oh, I am the ultimate wench. It's Ruth, the piratical maid of Alver.
Wade Riggs, who is
the
pirate king. Ariel Couch. Okay, get Ariel close to a microphone.
I play Mabel.
Uh huh.
Behind of a Liberty Gibbet.
Liberty Gibbet.
Yeah, she's ridiculous and really fun.
Oh, okay. And then Jeremiah Essus, and your part in this, Jeremiah?
I play Frederick, who is the pirate apprentice who is honor-bound to destroy all pirates.
Okay. Now, and I'm sorry.
In love with Mabel.
Oh, okay. Aww. Now, obviously, you all do something else besides this in your real lives here. So, passion. This is your, this is your passion.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, we do the other stuff to support our habits.
That's what I was going to say. That's what I was going to say. It takes, you have a job, but you want to make sure the job doesn't go beyond a certain time so you can make it to production.
That's great. It's a good drug.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so let's, Ashley, tell us again times, dates, and where it's at.
We open May 1st on Saturday. And we have a 3 o'clock and a 7 o'clock. And then Sunday, we have a 3 o'clock. And then next weekend, the 7th and 8th, that's a Friday and Saturday, we have a 7 o'clock. And then we close on the 9th on a 3 o'clock. And this is at CSLR, which is a Center for Spiritual Living down on Hartnell, 1905 Hartnell.
Okay, and the tickets cost?
$7 and $9.
So
seven,
that's reasonable.
$7 and $9 for a play put on by a great bunch of people.
All right, and the Center of Spiritual, what's it called again?
Center for Spiritual Living and Rest.
Right, there are several concerts that they hold there. Mm-hmm. It's a good house, and we've
it's
been there.
It's a good
there.
Theater. Yeah, it's a good theater.
And, well, congratulations, you guys are doing it. And we encourage everybody to go out and support your local theater and the folks that are so passionate about doing it. That's what it is to have a community thrive.
And thank you very much for being here today.
Thank you for having us.
All right, guys. Okay, have anything to close with? On the spot.
A paradox.
A paradox.
A most ingenious paradox. We quips and quibbles, herd and flocks, but none to beat this paradox.
Great. Thank you very, very much. And, you
love
know,
it.
Break a leg.
Thank
yeah.
you.
That's that whole on-the-spot stuff I love. It's like, you know, sing a cappella right now. Thanks,
right.
guys.
Our guest, got about a minute and a half here. Our guest in the next hour will be Senator Tom Harmon. He is running for Attorney General for the state of California. He's one of the three Republicans that are in the primaries. And wants to be the Attorney General. We've got, when he comes back, we're going to be asking him some questions. You know, I've checked his record in this, and he has his voting record is as a Republican as you can imagine. But there are many parts of the laws here in California that I'm very interested in, and that I would like to see the Attorney General see what his take is. You know, for the man who wants to be the Attorney General. And right now, and of course, all the phone lines are lighting up. You know, one of the things I wanted to talk about was a quickie here is that oil spill that's off the coast of Louisiana. It went from 1,000 gallons to 5,000 gallons, they're saying, a day. And just listening to the head of the parish down there, parish is like a county up here, they lead the nation in the oyster beds and shrimp farming. And right now, they're afraid that the 25-knot winds that are going to be coming up tonight is going to push the oil directly into the up the river and into the beds where their whole economy is based at. But we're going to talk about many other things. But when we come back, Senator Tom Harmon will be our guest. This is Carl and Linda Bott, Free Fire Radio, KCNR 1460, Clearly News Talk Radio.
This is KCNR Shasta Redding. Good morning, Redding.
Welcome back to Free Fire Radio. It's Carl and Linda Bott, KCNR 1460, Clearly News Talk Radio. It is 5 after the hour of 8 o'clock.
Currently 40 degrees. It's going to be high today of 61. They do say there's a 30% chance of showers. You know what? We've got somebody on the line, and it's really funny. We talked about sardines. And before we get to the senator, we're going to do two quick things. We had an email coming in that from Jeff. We, too, like the occasional tin of sardines and was disappointed that I had heard on the news a couple of weeks ago that the last American sardine cannery was about to close. When are we going to stop losing American businesses? Hate to think which country is going to pick up the slack. Have a great show.
Well, you know, we're going to address that, the part about business, with our guest, Senator Tom Harmon. But first, we're going to go to Rob. Hey, Rob, you're on line 4 here.
Hey, good morning.
Morning.
Hey, give us a quickie on sardines.
Hey, well, you know, you can't be a chief petty officer unless you go through chief's initiation. And sardines are just a minor, small part of eating that type of food for a chief's initiation. The worst thing that we had to eat was balut. You know what balut is?
Yeah, that's a...
So if you make chief petty officer and you can eat balut,
would you please?
It takes a lot. You'd have to take a lot of grief when you make chief petty officer.
I don't want to know.
So that's the difference between officers and chiefs.
Oh, you know, like I haven't eaten balut before.
I have one up on you. I'm not sure exactly what that is, but it was fish lips in China. Fish lip soup. I didn't know it till I was like, you know, the slimy thing, and I was like, what's that? So, gross.
Well, we had to drink fish oil shots.
Oh.
So that's just a little bit of the stuff that we had that we were encouraged to do. We weren't made to, but we were encouraged.
So the sardine story kind of brought back some memories.
Absolutely.
In fact, he sees a photo of a sardine and he has to run outside. Hey, Rob, yeah. Thanks a lot for your phone call.
Good stuff. Thanks.
Okay. All right. Line one here. Our guest today is Senator Tom Harmon, and we met the senator, it was last Saturday, in fact, up in Anselmo's, and we just happened to be riding by and had stopped for lunch, and we got to meet the senator. He's from, he is running for the nomination to be the Republican nominee for Attorney General of the state of California. Good morning, Senator.
Good morning. Good morning. How are you today?
We're great. Thank you for being on KCNR.
And you represent right now the 35th district. Is that correct?
That's the 35th state senate district down in Southern California, Orange County, a pretty much coastal area of Orange County. My hometown is Huntington Beach.
Well, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, Senator?
Well, of course, I'm an attorney. You have to be an attorney to run for the office of Attorney General. I've been practicing law in California for 35, 40 years. I started out in Long Beach with the law firm of Lucas and Duke Majan. Duke Majan was, of course, George Duke Majan, who went on to become Attorney General and Governor. I moved to Orange County after being with that firm for about 4 or 5 years and had a practice, legal practice in Huntington Beach. Got elected to the Huntington Beach City Council, served there for about 6 years. Pretty good sized city, 200,000 people, $100 million budget, a lot of, you know, local issues dealing with unions and contracts and things that taxes, those types of things, local experience. Then on to the legislature, where I served in the assembly for 6 years, and now I'm in the state senate and been in the state senate for 4 years. This coming June. I'm the vice chairman of the Judiciary Committee, hear all the bills related to judiciary issues, and I'm currently the Republican whip in the Senate, which is the number three position in the leadership team of our Senate leader, Republican Dennis Hollingsworth.
Okay, now you're also, if I've researched this correctly, you're a veteran?
Yes, I am a veteran. I served in the 4th Infantry Division for 2 years back in the mid-60s.
Okay. We've got to take a break here, Senator. When we come back, I want to talk about some of the bills that you've introduced or that you're you're interested in, plus your ideas on just a variety of subjects so people get to know you.
Sure.
But one of the things I sure want to talk about is personal rights of people, individual rights, but also business and water rights.
Sure.
So this is Carl and the Bot, Free Fire Radio, KCNR 1460. Our guest is Senator Tom Harmon, who is running in the primary to be the Republican nominee for the state of California Attorney General. Join us after these messages. Welcome back to Free Fire Radio on KCNR 1460. We're streaming at KCNR1460.com, so wherever you're at, you can hear us. You can take us with you on your iPod. You can take us everywhere. Our phone lines here are 605-4567. Our guest is Senator Tom Harmon, who wants to be the Republican nominee to run for Attorney General and then be Attorney General. Is that right, Senator?
Absolutely. We're very optimistic about our chances in the June 8th primary, and I'm looking forward to being California's next Attorney General.
Well, I tell you what, we appreciate the fact that that you think enough of the North State to appear on the show, and as many other politicians and people running for office have been, come on Free Fire Radio. But we appreciate the fact that you wanted to be on live and answer the questions.
My pleasure.
Senator, one of the things that you've introduced, I believe it's your bill, is the Senate Bill 1364, the pay to stay.
Yes.
Could you, I find this so interesting.
Share the information with our listeners, if you will.
Sure. The pay-to-stay bill says more or less that prisoners that are in our state prison system have to pay a small amount, a per diem charge, if you will, not to exceed $25 a day. for staying in our prisons. If they want to buy snacks and candy and other little incidentals, they have to pay for those, and they don't get them at reduced subsidized prices. This program was instituted by a local county sheriff in Massachusetts who recently came out here to California to testify in support of this bill. And he has saved, or actually earned, $700,000 just in his county by charging prisoners to stay in his county jail. So it's fashioned after that program.
Well, you know, frankly, I think that's a great idea. But then what about the ones that can't pay?
Well, the ones that can't pay, that's not an uncommon situation. When they're released from jail or from prison, if they stay out of prison for 2 years, then the debt is forgiven. So it's kind of a carrot in front of the horse type thing to keep people from going back to jail. You know, we have a very severe recidivism rate here in California. 70% of prisoners that are released from our state prisons are right back in prison within 3 years. That's the recidivism rate at 70%. It's way too high. And we're hopeful that this bill would be an inducement to prisoners that are released to not return to jail because they would have this debt forgiven.
So, Senator, do you think that the reason there's such a large number of prisoners that return, are we, what's the word I want to say, making it too comfortable for them and not making it hard enough for them when they get out, that, you know, accountability?
Well, that's part of it, but perhaps an even bigger part is the failure of the prison system to have adequate education for the prisoners and vocational job training, rehabilitation, things like that. And they get out of prison, they don't have a job, they don't even have a driver's license, and pretty soon they're down at the corner liquor store committing a robbery, and they wind up right back in prison again. So that's a number of factors that are causing this high recidivism rate, and we're just hopeful that a kind of a multi-pronged approach would help reduce that. And that, of course, will save an enormous amount of money for California taxpayers if we could reduce our prison population.
Oh, what kind of support are you having with the bill?
Well, unfortunately, the bill was heard last week before the Senate Public Safety Committee, and it was defeated on a pretty much party-line vote, with the Democrats voting no and the Republicans and my colleagues in the Senate voting on that committee voting yes. But we're hopeful that it might come back. I think we have people taking a look at it, and it's very impressive to see that this rather modest-sized county in Massachusetts was so successful with it. If they can do it, why in the world can't we do it out here?
Well, there's probably 1,000 reasons for that, Senator. But, you know, this is the same Public Safety Committee that now says that when I buy a box of 22 ammunition, I have to give a thumbprint. So
it's kind of ridiculous, particularly in the area of Second Amendment rights and things of that nature. There have been a lot of developments, as you know, on Second Amendment rights, particularly with the Supreme Court having handed down the Heller decision recently. We're very pleased with that decision, that it does, in fact, confirm the rights of individuals to have handguns and firearms for their own private personal use.
Well, now, Senator Obama said that the laws that are good for Rawlings, Wyoming, may not be good for Chicago, Illinois. It seems to me is that the murder rate in Rawlings, Wyoming, is like 1,000% less than it is in Chicago, Illinois, with very strict gun laws.
Well, that's exactly right, and there is another case. The Heller case has been decided. That was decided in June of 2008. There is currently today pending before the United States Supreme Court a case entitled McDonald versus Chicago. Chicago has a very restrictive ban on the possession of handguns. And, you know, what's the practically the murder capital of the United States? Well, it's Chicago. So the ban on handguns is simply not working, and it's being challenged, and we are optimistic that the McDonald Court will follow the precedent of the Heller Court and say, yes, people can have handguns to protect themselves in their own homes under certain circumstances, and I'm hopeful the court will do that.
Well, you know, absolutely, Senator. You know, I was in Iraq, even though it was tough times, when we were, you know, one of the Marines was going back on leave back to Chicago, and we worried about him because they were killing more young men in Chicago than we were losing in Iraq during the middle of a hot war.
Isn't that amazing?
I'm a lifelong
gun owner and a lifelong hunter. I'm proud of that fact, and I want you and your listeners to know that I will always be there to help fight for and protect Second Amendment rights.
One of the things I'm very impressed with as well is your stand on the death penalty. Could you share some of your thoughts about that with our listeners?
Well, our death penalty system here in California is completely broken. Everyone knows that. We haven't had an execution since, I think, 1978 or something like that. And we have almost 700 men and women on death row currently. And the problem, the real difficult situation is involved with appeals. After a defendant is convicted of murder and sentenced to the death penalty, that's when the fun and games begin. The delay is nearly, in California, averaging 18 years. We have some on death row been there 27 years. That's absolutely unacceptable. I've authored legislation to try and speed up that appellate process, to try and give additional funding to pay for lawyers that are qualified to argue death penalty appeals, both for the state and for the defense. I've authored legislation to do away with the three-drug cocktail that one of the courts held was unconstitutional and substitute just a simple one-drug, an anesthetic that can be humanely and easily used to put a condemned person to death. So those are some of the things we're working on, but we certainly need to modernize, streamline, and reform the death penalty in order to get it to work.
Okay, Senator. You know, we're going to have to take a quick break here, Senator. This is Carl and Linda Bott on Free Fire Radio, KCNR 1460. Our guest is Senator Tom Harmon. Join us after these messages.
Sheer blood.
Welcome back to Free Fire Radio, KCNR 1460. Carl and Linda Bott. The time is 8:25. Our guest is Senator Tom Harmon, who is running for the Republican nomination to be the Attorney General of the state of California. Welcome back, Senator.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Well, you know, like I said, we appreciate that you think enough of the North State to come on our show and to let the people know who you are.
Very important part of our state, as you well know, and many of us here in California sometimes forget the importance of the northern part of the state of California.
Well, we mention that occasionally. We, not disparaging, you know, use the term flatlander sometimes. But, you know, Senator, the Attorney General, what are his duties, or what are the Attorney General's duties?
Well, they're very broad ranging. As you know, the Attorney General is the chief law enforcement officer of the state of California. I like to describe it as dividing the duties into two pots. One is a criminal aspect of the job, and one is on the civil side, civil lawsuits. On the criminal side, Attorney General regulates firearms registration, runs a DNA laboratory, runs a criminal identification laboratory, prosecutes cases when there's a conflict of interest with the local district attorney disqualifying himself or herself, a wide-ranging number of enforcement activities, narcotics enforcement. You probably see a lot of that up in the north part of the state, things like that. Then on the other side of the building, on the civil side, they are charged with the responsibility of enforcing our privacy laws, things dealing with identity theft, small businesses and protecting them from flim-flam lawsuits, that are filed by ambulance chasing lawyers sometimes, things of that nature. So a very broad-ranging schedule of duties in the Attorney General's office.
I'm sure a question on many people's minds, and probably would love to ask you this, how has it been for you working with Governor Schwarzenegger?
Well, I do, in fact, work with the governor. I'm part of the leadership team on the Republican Senate side. We do have occasions where we talk to the governor about some of the goals and that we have. But the governor, I think, missed a really terrific opportunity to make some reforms and changes in fundamental ways we conduct government here in California. He came in, he was very, very popular. I forget what his ratings were, but they were 60-70%. And now they, over a period of several years, they've gone down, and I think his rating now is below 20%, one of the lowest of any governor in recent memory, even lower than Gray Davis, who was recalled. So from a personal standpoint, I have to tell you I am disappointed in the way the governor has conducted his business during his term in office.
You know, we've only got like a minute and a half, where if you have to take the half-hour break, Senator.
Sure.
Do you think that Schwarzenegger, when he put up all those initiatives on the ballot a couple years ago and lost every one of them, did it take the fire out of him?
Well, I don't know that it took the fire out of him, but I do think it was a political mistake, and it was a political mistake made by someone that was something of an amateur. He had not been involved in politics. I think he misread his popularity and thought he could do anything he wanted to do, and he got a real lesson in hardball politics, and they were all defeated. And I think that started his spiraling down, and he perhaps got bad advice from his handlers or political consultants, and resulted in basically not a whole lot being done. You know, I sit here and ask myself, well, what is his legacy? What's he done that's going to be remembered? And it's very little, if anything.
Well, I think one of the biggest legacies is a $20 billion deficit.
Right. Senator Harmon, we have to take a break here. Please stay with us. We're going to listen to a little bit of Fox News here. It's 44 degrees. You're listening to Carla Linda Bott here on Free Fire Radio. This is KCNR, clearly, News Talk Radio. Good morning, Redding. Currently 44 degrees here in the North State. Taking your call, 605-4567. If you've got a question for our very special guest, Senator Tom Harmon, it's 8:34, and good morning.
This portion of the show brought to you by Tobacco and Brew, 2143 Hilltop Drive. Finest tobacco emporium in the North State. Espresso Joe's for the best coffee that you could possibly have in the North State. So much more than just a tobacco emporium. Senator, welcome back.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
You know, one of the things, and your website, could you give us your website? Because it's interesting. You've got a lot of great things on it.
Sure. The website is www.tomharmon4, and that's an Arabic number 4, tomharmon4ag.com. AG, of course, Attorney General. So www.tomharmon4ag.com.
Okay. Now, one of the things that we've seen on one of your websites there is...
It's the Harmon Report.
The Harmon Report.
Yes.
Where it talks about budget dust.
Right.
Can you explain to our listeners what budget dust is?
Well, budget dust is something that we see every year up here in Sacramento, where trying to cobble together a budget, the parties that are doing that use accounting tricks, smoke and mirrors, borrowing from internal funds. In other words, there might be some money in a fish and game fund, and they'll strip that money out of there and put it into the general fund so they can use it to fund some social program in some other part of the state. It's all just illusory, and it's tricks, and it makes no sense.
Well, you know, I'm just kind of speechless sometimes, Senator, but because we start talking budget, my blood pressure rises like about 50 degrees. on this. Because of the mechanics of what's happened, in the Senate, you have been trying to fight the battle to get the budget under control. What is your opinion of what's going to happen here in the next couple of years?
We have to curtail our spending in Sacramento. We are simply out of control, spending more than we have coming in. If you think of the revenue then the expenses, the revenue is less than the expenses, and the expenses exceed our projected revenue by $20 billion, and that's why we call it a structural deficit. It's not a surprise. It's not something new. We know it's in there. We know it's coming. It's not something we are, you know, suddenly struck with some catastrophe that's caused a huge increase in spending. This is just normal spending, and it's just too much, and we have to cut back and learn to live within our means. That's what you and I do when we have a cutback of our income. Someone's laid off at work or something like that. What do they do? Well, they cut back their spending. So that's what California needs to do.
Well, Senator, according to the Associated Press, how do you feel about the estate sale that Schwarzenegger is going to his idea was to sell off some buildings, like $600 million to help close the California deficit. Some of the properties up for sale include the Reagan office building in downtown Los Angeles, the San Francisco Civic Center, which houses the state Supreme Court, and several buildings in downtown Sacramento. How do you feel about that?
I'm very much opposed to it. I voted no on the budget when that was included in the budget last year. Here's a good illustration. There's a big state office building in downtown Los Angeles that the state's owned for, 18, 20, 25 years, and has gradually been paying it off. In just a few years, I think 2 or 3 years, the building will be completely paid off and will be free and clear. For heaven's sakes, don't we want to do that rather than sell the building, get a modest amount of one-time money in a off, you know, real estate market? We'll get lowest possible price, and then we turn around and pay rent for years and years and years and decades on the very same building that we would have owned outright if we'd just paid the mortgage payment on it for the next couple, 2-3 years.
One of the big things up here, Senator, and you kind of mentioned it as an aside, is the problems that we have with the large-scale marijuana production areas up here. But the question has just come in from one of our listeners is, What
problems do you see with the current state regulations concerning medical marijuana, and what changes would you make?
The problem with the medical marijuana is that the process is being abused by what I'll kind of generally describe as people that are not acting in good faith in opening up these dispensaries. And you can go to a doctor, you get them phony prescription for marijuana because you tell them you've got a backache or a toothache or an earache or something like that, and next thing you know, you're in a marijuana dispensary and you're able to buy marijuana based on the issuance of that prescription. The whole idea behind medical marijuana is to provide some modest relief from people that have real, true, legitimate medical concerns, particularly cancer patients. I'm told that it is a successful type of treatment, but this is being totally abused, and we need to regulate it. Hundreds and hundreds of these dispensaries have been popping up and opening up in larger cities, and is causing a real problem.
Well, we've had around 35 open up right here in Redding.
Amazing, isn't it?
It is, and it's the kind of thing is that, you know, medicinal marijuana, you know, we know people that have used it in the sense that, you know, for pain, as you talked about. But again, when you have abuse, I mean, you talk to people that are, you know, are pushing the idea of using it, you know, we have no problem with that, but you've got to, you know, you've got to embrace the position, too, is that there is abuse of it, and it needs to be handled that way. And it's difficult for some people to see that. You know, we've got to take a break here, Senator. When we come back, you know, can the Attorney General, when he sees a law that's been passed by the California legislature, can you challenge that? Can you look at this and say whether this is a law that should be challenged and to take it to court?
Okay, you want to talk about that when we come back?
Yeah, I want to talk about that when we come back, and then also where you see the Attorney General's office going. All right, this is Carl and DeBott, Free Fire Radio, KCNR 1460, Clearly News Talk Radio. Make your plan. Welcome back to Free Fire Radio. It's Carl and Linda Bott, KCNR 1460. The time is 8:45. Get rolling, get moving. Hey, our guest today is Senator Tom Harmon, who is running for the Republican nomination to be the Attorney General of the state of California, which is, of course, a big job here in California. And we had a couple of questions for him. But, Senator, we have a caller who wants to ask you a question.
Sure, go ahead.
Okay, Art, you're on.
Yes, good morning, all three. Yes. I have a question for the senator, one I've wondered about for a long time. I know that the state, when this tidal wave of debt came rolling in, made cuts in certain programs. What I want to know is, what cuts were made in the billions of dollars that are spent on illegal aliens in this state and all the programs that they have ridden down to the ground? I've never heard that on the news. I don't know if it's been a dime, a dollar. Does the senator know that?
Yes, Art, thank you for that question. To rephrase it, it's basically what cuts have been made in spending that benefits illegal aliens in this country. And unfortunately, the answer to that is very little. Currently in California, California taxpayers like yourself and others spend $10 billion a year for services that are provided free of charge to illegal aliens. And that $10 billion is spent on three items: education, incarceration, and health care. So if the illegal alien shows up at the emergency room, they get free medical care for whatever condition they need. Their children are sent to our school systems at no charge. They're not paying any property taxes or anything. So programs, when we did cut, were not necessarily targeted or directed towards cutting expenditures that benefit illegal aliens.
Do you think there's any time before this earth ends up in a fireball that will ever happen in a state Senate completely controlled by the Democrats?
No, it won't, Art. It's a very partisan issue with the Democrats. They feel very strongly they don't want to cut those kind of programs, and I'm not optimistic that's going to happen in the near future. The legislature, both houses, the Senate and the Assembly, are controlled by rather substantial margins by the Democrats, and this is one of their key issues, is that they want to protect and, in fact, even promote the benefits and expand the benefits that are being paid to illegal aliens that are in this country. And I like to use the phrase, what part of illegal don't people understand? These people are here illegally. And then we have the overriding problem of the failure, the colossal failure of the federal government to reimburse California for the expenses that we're having to incur because of the failed federal immigration policies.
Yeah, I believe I have the answer. What we need to do is declare war on Arizona, immediately surrender, and have their laws brought into the state.
Go Arizona.
That's a pretty good one, Art. Yeah. I hadn't heard that one, but maybe that's something we should consider. And by the way, the Arizona immigration law that just signed by the Arizona governor this week is certainly causing a lot of consternation among the supporters of the illegal immigrants in this country. You know, we have 12 million illegal immigrants in this country, 2 or 3 million right here in California.
They are know that, and everybody knows it, and that's, you know, it's a damn shame the direction that this once lovely state has went. And, you know, the Republicans are up against it because the votes are down south, and us guys up here in the north state, they crack the whip, we take the trip.
The
second idea is we should split the state in two right at Sacramento, have a Northern California, a Southern California. I've talked about this with Carl before.
Yeah.
I don't think he agrees completely.
Well, no, you know, in fact, you know, we're the size of the state of Ohio up here. And anyway, hey, Art, we've got to run here. Thanks so much for
your phone call,
including surrendering to Arizona.
Always trying to help, Carl.
I know. Hey, thanks a lot, Art. Hey, you know, Senator, one of the things I just saw in the paper today is the Pima County Sheriff has said that he's not going to enforce the law that the state legislature just passed. What is the Attorney General doing something like that?
Well, of course, you're talking about Arizona.
Yeah, that's what I was just
talking
about. Right,
California. But, so,
would you have leeway though if something like that happened to you know, start a lawsuit against them or what?
The ability of a local county sheriff to enforce the laws in some areas is somewhat discretionary. We have that here in California. Sometimes a sheriff will decide that this law is not a good law, and they will exercise their discretion to not necessarily enforce it. So I suppose a Pima County sheriff, if he wants to, can do that. We've had a situation with the district attorney in San Francisco, a woman by the name of Kamala Harris, who has elected not to enforce the death penalty up there. So I strongly, strongly disagree with that, but nevertheless, she has the jurisdiction to do it. Steve Cooley, the district attorney in Los Angeles County, has elected, in many cases, to not enforce the three strikes and you're out felony rule, where the felon that gets the third conviction and goes to jail for 25 years of life. So it does happen. Can the Attorney General override those discretionary decisions? Probably not, unless they originally get into the case as the original prosecutor of record.
Okay. You know, we've got to take another break, Senator, and the phone lines are backed up, so they take priority over our questions. So we come back, we have some more listeners that have a question.
Okay, that'll be fine.
Okay, this is Carl and the Bot, Free Fire Radio, KCNR 1460, Clearly News Talk Radio.
Good morning, Reading. It's 8:54 in the morning, currently 46 degrees. Oh, you know, the forecast says there's going to be a 30% chance of showers, but you know what? Go on.
I mean, 70% chance of sun.
I don't, yeah, 70%. There you go. Wear your sandals today. Who cares? 605-4567. We're taking your calls. We just have a few minutes left with Senator Tom Harmon, who is running for California Attorney General. But first, we also want to say that the weather is always brought to you by Ensalmo Vineyards, which is our favorite destination. And by the way, that is where we got to meet you over the weekend. Isn't it a spectacular spot?
Oh, it's a beautiful, beautiful winery out towards Shingletown. I can't think of a prettier spot in Northern California than Ensalmo Vineyards.
It's a, you know, and they are constantly expanding their facilities there to be able to, you know, for food and everything. But anyway, Senator, we have a caller. John,
right.
You're on with
Good morning,
Senator
John.
Harmon.
Thank you.
And we've
Good
only
morning,
got a couple
sir.
Minutes left here, John, so I want to give the Senator time to...
I'll be real quick.
You know, okay.
Senator Harmon.
Yes.
I've contacted the AG's office regards fraudulent activities by 501c nonprofit corporations on a number of occasions and been told that due to the corporations having annual incomes of under $2.5 million, they wouldn't look into the issue. And it seems this is a passport to fraud and abuse as long as the perpetrators stay under a certain financial level. Is there a chance that if you become the Attorney General that you'll create some kind of a small business agency that will allow us to make or get some investigative work done into these type of things? It sounds like a good idea to me, and let me tell you that I have indicated publicly that the first thing I'm going to do when I'm Attorney General is basically conduct an internal audit of all of the departments to see what they do and how they do it and are the programs that they are administering working properly and efficiently to the benefit of California citizens. And this might very well be an area
that
should be looked at. It sounds a little unusual to me that they only look at a nonprofit that has an income of $2.5 million or more. The Attorney General does have broad-ranging regulatory authority over nonprofit corporations, so they are doing that, but what you're telling me is they are limiting the amount of investigation that they do
Which leads me to one last thing I want to take a look at. Sir.
Hey, John.
Thank you for the heads up on that.
Yes, go ahead. Hey, John, we've got to cut off because we only have 3 minutes left, and I want to give the senator time to talk about a couple other things here.
Okay.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Very good. Thank you.
You bet. Hey, you know, Senator, one of the things you said, that's one of the things you would do when you first got in there. What are a couple of things that you would jumpstart the Attorney General's office with?
Well, I'm particularly concerned about the responsibility the Attorney General has to write the title and summary for citizen initiatives. When you circulate a citizen's initiative, a ballot initiative, before it can go out for circulation, the Attorney General is charged with the responsibility of writing the title for that initiative and also writing the summary, which then appears on the ballot pamphlet that voters see. Our current Attorney General, Jerry Brown, in my view, has used that power and authority to sort of assert his own personal political views, his own philosophical views, things of that nature, which I think is wrong. I indicated that when I'm the Attorney General, I'm going to give a fair and honest appraisal of each ballot initiative, whether I like it or whether I don't like it. It is what it is, and we need to follow the law, particularly when you are acting in the capacity of Attorney General.
Well, I wholeheartedly agree. The way that those are written, it can just change the whole meaning of what the
initiative
is.
Exactly, and it's very deceptive, and people think, well, gee, you know, this is going to prevent people from voting or something like that, when it's totally untrue.
Well, again, I agree with you 100% on that. We've got about a minute left. Senator, tell us again, tell our listeners again, how can they get your website so that
sure.
they can see a lot of things we've been seeing here?
As you know, I'm candidate in the Republican primary for the Office of Attorney General, and my website is www.tomharman4attorneygeneral. Harman is spelled H-A-R-M-A-N, not O-N, H-A-R-M-A-N, then the Arabic number 4, A-G, tomharman4ag.com.
We thank you so much for being our guest today. It's been enlightening, to say the least.
I've enjoyed it, Linda and Carl, and anytime I'd be happy to report back to you as the campaign develops. Want to encourage everyone to be sure and vote in the June 8th primary.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll be talking to you soon.
You
thank
bet,
you
Senator.
So
thank
much.
You so much for taking the time.
All right, bye-bye.
All right. Tomorrow our guest will be Mike Michalak from The Fly Shop.
Yeah.
And we've got a couple other surprises for you. But this is Carl on the Bot on Free Fire Radio. Just remember, it's the good guys against the bad guys. Which are you?
This is KCNR, Shasta Redding.